You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
And then the life lessons. We've learned this. We spoke about it the other day. You know, marriage. We said, imagine our parents were close by. All the troubles, if you have trouble, you just go talk to them. I just said to my wife, you can't call your parents, too expensive. So they actually thought we never had a fight. I'm actually going to get killed later on. But it's right here.
Hooray!
My guest on the Dan Nichols Show this week is somebody with whom I have some cultural points of connection. He is the most Afrikaans-sounding Irishman you will ever meet. And there's some green blood to go with that green and gold because it is none other than CJ Stunder. Welcome, CJ.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me. It's great to see you again and to see some familiar Irish blood and faces.
I'm trying very hard, listening very carefully to see if I can pick up just a flicker of an Irish accent. I've got to be honest, it's fairly muted.
Yeah, but now it's gone. Someone asked me the other day, do you speak English or Afrikaans? I couldn't answer him back in English. So now it's faded completely. I reckon in the next few weeks I'll pick up again.
If pushed, can you give us a stab at an Irish accent?
Yes, I used to. In Limerick they used to say "boy the kid." That's probably my best. And I got the slang. What's the crack, lad? And that's probably what I'm pushed, really. You know,
you've got such a fascinating story, and it's one that's not dissimilar to the story of your brother-in-law and our very close friend Rake Nettling, in that you've got these two very contrasting cultures that have defined so much of who you are. In Rake's case, going over to America, going to college, honing his swimming craft, and now back in South Africa. For you, it was slightly different. It was heading over to Ireland, where you get 11 minutes of sun a year, and it's just a very, very different space. But I'm not sure of all our South African exports, and we've had many in the sporting field. I know anybody who has found such a natural second home. You were made to spend that time in Ireland.
Yeah, it was. It's funny you mentioned that now with Rake as well. Someone told me the other day, I'm the Wish version of Rake. So I'm not sure if I was if it was a compliment. I don't think it was, but anyway, we had similar backgrounds. Really, if you look at it, at a young age moving over and. I think that's why we connected so well. But, you know, for me, we spoke about this in length after a few good wines at your place a few months ago. But the culture and the people is something that's very close to my heart. It's the lovely people, always open their doors for me and my family, and never made me feel like I wasn't wanted or wasn't welcome. And it was always I always tell people when I want to go for a tour to Ireland, I said to them, don't plan too much for the evenings. You can walk into an Irish pub, sit down, and you'll have a drink with anyone for the rest of the night, and they will sort you out for the rest of the trip. And that's the great part of Ireland for me. You know, I walked in any place. It doesn't matter if it was a pub or it was a restaurant. People made time for me, and I took to that. You know, that I was in Limerick, and I almost had that sense of a small town. It was a city, but a small town feeling to it, and we just grew. We grew up there, me and my wife.
It's something you can look back now in hindsight with great fondness, and you understand that Irish culture, but it wasn't something you really knew much about. And it was a time in your career where I'm imagining there was a reasonable amount of uncertainty, because the childhood dream, as your rugby talent became apparent, of one day playing for the Springboks seemed to have disappeared. You didn't really have a first choice rugby home in South Africa. You needed to find something different to do. It obviously worked out so wonderfully well. But at that stage, how nervous, how uncertain were you of what life had to hold?
Yeah, Dan, I grew up wanting to play for the Springboks. I'm not going to hide that. I played on SA under 20 and SA schools and all those things, and always thought that, you know, the group that I was involved with, we are going to move on and play together. And then obviously things didn't work out. And age of 22, to be in a new country with a very difficult language, and it's not the English, I'm talking about the Irish language, the Irish English, was a lot of, there was a lot of questions, a lot of times where I almost just said, look, let's make a U-turn, take this take this ship back home and back to South Africa to the farm. But I had a great support structure, and if I look back on that, and when I give people advice and I talk about it, you have to obviously be strong first when you go over, confident and all those things. Yes, that's important. Be your own person and great. That's awesome. But you need a good support structure. Family for me was very important, and I was lucky enough to meet my wife when I was very young. And at an early age, and she made the world of a difference. She made sure that if I was negative, she made me positive. So there's a lot of things we grew up there, and the uncertainty was there. I tell you what, I played 50 tests and I sat down and I said to my wife, you know, the next game, I'm not sure I'm going to play. So the uncertainty was always there, but it helped me a lot. You know, I was never comfortable. I was always on edge. And now in life, I use that. When I get uncomfortable, I know I'm in the right zone. Then I know, right, I'm going to work here. I'm going to make things happen. When I'm too comfortable, then I'm in trouble.
It's hard to imagine you being uncomfortable, though, from the outside, because if I look at the adoration for CJ Stunder, CJ is now the fourth most common name in Munster of children of a certain age. There's CJ Stunder Avenue. There are CJ Stunder statues. Munster fell in love with you completely, and it was absolute adoration. It's really difficult for me to get my head around you having that sense of discomfort, because there was clearly so much love for you over there.
Yeah, the love from the town and the people. I think the big difference is we settled into Limerick and into Munster and Cork very quickly and in a different way. We obviously went to the rugby circles, but I used to like exploring, and we went exploring every weekend, and I was into cars, and I started buying the Fender 90, and then you meet a local mechanic, because obviously it's a Land Rover and he gets your trouble, and then you meet the butcher. And so we started making started creating this community for ourselves, and I think the love came from there. People, sometimes my wife says a negative thing, but I think it's a good thing. I am where I am. You know, there's sometimes I swear, and sometimes like there's one line and that's it. I don't tell lies, because I don't want to be lied to. So that made it easy. But the people saw in town and what they saw around is that's what they saw on the pitch. But back to that uncomfortable piece, even playing for Munster, I was my last year, I said to my wife, I don't think I'm going to make it, you know. So that was always there. And I think that still makes me want to be better all the time. I want to be better. I want to be playing every, well, back then I wanted to play all the games and I wanted to be better. And I think that's the decision when I realized I couldn't play better anymore. I said, well, Tom, let's call it a day. So let's shock everyone.
You came through some amazing games of rugby. The sense of those of us who watch is that there must be some nerves as you're lining up for a big game and the anthem's being played, or you've got a major game for Munster. And yet, of all these sporting-related challenges you had that probably made you the most nervous, it wasn't rugby at all, but it was the first time you met a tall swimmer called Rake.
Yeah, I remember this. I met him a few times. It felt to me the first time, you know, because he's this, he's on a pedestal for me in a good way, you know. He's this icon of South Africa. Yeah. I remember when I was younger, he was the ultimate bachelor for like 20 years. So when you open, I can't remember what the book was, the magazine was, but he was always in front of it. And knowing him now, he never wanted that, you know. He's one of the pulled back guys ever. Shy, doesn't want to be in the media. And to know that he was on the front page, I can't remember, Sport Illustrated, whatever. So meeting him the first time, I remember it was a show with Nathaniel. I took my mom with, and he was in the show because he made a joke about him, or he used him in the show. And I met him there, and then I met him again, and I actually introduced myself again, because I was shocked, you know. Meeting him was obviously back then a big honor, and then I had to tell him that I'm dating his sister and then marrying her. So now things are...
How did he take that at first? And I ask this for a reason, because as I've brought up with him subsequently many times, and please don't take this the wrong way, it was purely in jest, but I said to Rake years ago, before she'd ever met you, for a bit of a laugh, oh yeah, no, Rake, I could be your brother-in-law. He literally tried to punch me.
I know, it's a dangerous place to walk and say stuff like that to him, but you know, knowing Rake, he didn't say a lot. You know, I always felt he was disappointed in the beginning, but he wasn't really. I think he he just thought maybe we were young and all the, those things. And I remember he said that he's going to come to the wedding, obviously, and he's going to give the
That's
wine.
That's nice of him.
Yeah. He's going to give the wine. And I remember he drove in with his Mercedes-Benz, like the slick Mercedes-Benz with the wine in the back. And he got out and his first words were, not hello, how's things or whatever. He's like, you better look after my sister. Because knowing him now, our daughter is about four years old, and seeing him with her, and I think that was the same feeling. He's so protective over Everly, our daughter. He's there every week, and he plays with her, and he makes sure she's. He always asks us, "Is he fine? Does he need anything?" So I could just think that situation for him was a tough one.
Family comes through repeatedly when you speak to Rake, or when you speak to you, as it is now in our conversation. And I think that was a big directive of what surprised many people, because when you said goodbye to Ireland as a rugby player, you were still playing amazing rugby. You were still very much, however uncomfortable you might have been, a first choice pick, and you could have had a few more years if you'd wanted them. But that sense of home is calling and family is calling, was that what really spoke to you and said, yep, now's the time to say goodbye?
Yeah, performance wise, I could have probably, I think I said it earlier too, maybe it two more years for sure, but I was obviously in a decline for myself. I set a lot of high standards in everything I do, and I could feel I'm on the decline. So putting that aside, family was number one. I remember coming back COVID time, seeing my parents getting older, and my brother he needed to take over the farm, and he was in those conversations with my dad. He was obviously looking back at it now. It was the best time, you know, looking into Rake's side of the family, my family-in-law, all of them. I just didn't want to sit one day and say, yes, we should have come back earlier so their grandparents can enjoy Everly and they could enjoy time together. And, you know, the thing we do now, if we pry on a Sunday, we normally do it at my house because I'm the pry master. I don't know if Rake said that.
but he said he's much better than you. I think those are his exact words.
Is he still here? We need to go talk to him. But we're normally at my place. So after he's finished riding his horses, that takes about 17 and a half hours of the morning. but you probably had a few horses in the conversation. So, you know, sitting down there for me, then looking back onto this, the whole setup, my family being there some weekends, and then, you know, that is it. That's what we wanted. Everyone is together now. We have challenges, yes. We overcome them as well as a family. But to see that joy everyone has is amazing.
And it's a joy that is now part of this new life back here in South Africa, where things have changed. When we have South African rugby players, they finish, it's often into commentary, or it's into coaching, or it's something linked to the game. You're now your brother-in-law's gardener and working here on the estate. It's a very different life to the one you had before. But there generally does seem to be a smile on the face, and you do seem to be enjoying what you're doing.
Yeah, so obviously the podcast you can't see, but Rake is in a nice attire, suit and a jersey. I'm actually sitting here sopping wet because I was outside running around trying to sort out the new development's water. But yeah, life is good. You know, I started coaching as well a little bit at Boys Eye, so I'm helping them, and that's amazing. But yeah, life, I wanted to be part of the game. It took me about 3 years now to get back involved on my terms, and I can coach in the afternoons, and that's great. And that's a nice thing of being your brother-in-law's gardener. You can ask him for afternoons off. But you know, the development and the construction is something that it's something amazing. You know, something starts from nothing, and what we do here is amazing. We go out, well, Rake and him go out and source property, and we get involved in. We build a community. So for me, and that's what I take from Ireland. I have to build with our team a community, and we try to do it the best we can, and so people can enjoy it. And, you know, look back one day and say, well, yes, I played a game. That was a great legacy, but I've moved on now. I want to do this. And look back one day and say, well, I finished that project. That's my legacy. So,
and that sense of community, it's one of the things that I think we can look a little enviously towards Ireland at, and that we live in a country where big walls and high fences are often a landmark, a hallmark of where we live. Whereas in Ireland, everybody just seems to be, and I know when I go over to see my family in the north, everyone's just one big family, and you're on the high street, you're meeting people, you're talking to everybody. It means nothing ever gets done on time, but it does mean everybody just has this incredible sense of kindred spirit to them.
That's the thing about a community, and I think you nailed it there. It's not family with blood. The community and family is the people around you, your neighbors. And that's the big thing that we realized very quickly there. I remember one Christmas Eve, we just moved into our new house in Castle Corner, Limerick, and everyone knocked on the door, and there was the whole street was there. There was 15 houses. They all got together at my place. We didn't invite anyone. We didn't plan this there. But it was that year, my house, the guys who stayed there before, the people who lived there before, that was their turn to host a Christmas party.
So they just all arrived. They were like, "Now, well,
that, there we go." Some of them could. It was an older neighborhood, so some of them couldn't remember that they spoke to them. But they just pitched up, and since then we had four Christmases together. And that's the thing. It's the community. That's the family.
Do you miss that?
Yeah, I do. The one lady across from the road, she made an unbelievable sausage roll and a lovely brownie. But now I do miss that. That's probably the one thing I miss: the friends and the family and the connections we made. I said earlier, we moved a little bit outside of the rugby circles because that's naturally the way you go for friendship. We had a lot of friends outside of the game, and we missed that. I mean, I've been back. I go back once or twice a year, but my wife hasn't been back. So we're actually going in November. She's been like, Dan, she's been crying. Some days I just catch her and she's crying. And I says, "What's wrong?" She goes, I just have to go back. So, you know, that's quite nice.
She's missing the rain and the mud and the...
Yeah, exactly. So I just said to her, "Today it's raining. Just go outside. You'll
feel at home.
You'll be fine."
The challenge post-rugby, when you have this split identity as you do, is an issue of support. And I've had this conversation with people like Alan Lamb and Kevin Peterson, where you've grown up somewhere, it still feels like home, but you've represented a different country. You've had a few years now to simmer on it. Is it still very straightforward? Ireland playing the Springboks, Ireland was my team, they're the team I'm cheering on?
Yeah, emotions is a funny thing. You know, you're in the game, and then when the Springboks are playing against someone else, yes, then I remember we've got little ones got Springbok Friday at school. We're in this fever and we're going at it. And then when they play, like now, when Ireland's playing against the Springboks, that is my team. Ireland is my team. I played for them. I bled for them sometimes.
Frequently.
Frequently.
Made many others bleed.
Frequently. So I've got a bigger connection there, you know, and that is a tricky thing to handle, because society wants you to, you know, you're in a conversation at a braai, and then there's 15 oaks saying, "Well, the Springboks are playing." And then they go, "Who are you supporting?" And then you have to be that guy to say, "Look, Ireland's my team," you know. So yeah, there's challenges with it. I think you grow and you get older and you get wiser, and I stand to it that Ireland's my team, and you know, the tests are a difficult one. I actually commentate there as well, so they use me as the Irish side. So I have to chat you afterwards just to get a bit of my accent back. Otherwise, I might not have a job next week.
We'll work on it for you. That'd be grand. Let me delve just a little bit more into this with a couple of very specific questions. Beef and Guinness pie or a Boerewors roll?
I love a pie, but the Boerewors roll, Boerewors roll.
Kurt Darren, were you too?
My wife is going to laugh at Kurt Darren. I just listened to it literally in the bucky now. So,
and this probably blurs the line ever so slightly more. If Bafana Bafana are playing Ireland, who are you supporting?
Still Ireland.
In a netherworld where those two teams would actually play, of course.
No, I've actually met some of the players, some of the football players, so not Ireland. Yeah. Two for one, is it?
This richness that it's given you. If I look at sport, I grew up wanting to be an athlete, was never quite in the space to be able to do so, but I wanted to do it because I wanted to be able to play that sport at the highest level. And when I look at it now from this point of departure, and I think you're a wonderful, wonderful example of this, is that there is so much more that sport offers than just those 80 minutes, just that trophy, just that tournament to play in. And that life experience, the richness that it has given you, given your wife, given your family, is every bit as valuable, if not more so, than the actual time spent playing the game that you went there for.
I think that's probably the biggest thing. If you take the game away, you know, the game made some unbelievable doors open for me. But if you look at what it gave to me as in life, what I've learned, the richness, you know, I said earlier, I moved over there when I was 22. I don't even remember paying tax in South Africa because it was all done for you. There, suddenly you have to start from scratch. So you're a young guy. And then the life lessons we've learned is, we spoke about it the other day, you know, marriage. We said, imagine our parents were close by and all the troubles, if we have trouble, you just go and you talk to them. I just said to my wife, you can't call your parents too expensive. So they actually thought we never had a fight. I'm actually going to get killed later on. But it's right here. But so we grew up together. We've learned together. And I grew up as a, you know, that's, and if we spoke, talk about emotions and richness, you know, I grew up South African, went over there, and then I grew up again as an adult Irish, you know, the Irish way. And that's the thing that I still, after 3 years being back, still try to float with, you know, how to manage those emotions and those life lessons and how to fit in, really. And I realized lately that you don't have to fit in. It's, if there's a mold somewhere that you get into, and then you sort it, but you don't have to fit in everywhere.
So I think it's safe to say then, in summing it all up, that the CJ Stander story, which is by no means finished, there are many more chapters to come, but up until this point, it's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. It's I am blessed. I've got a lot of things that still to come, but if I look back at it, yes, life has treated me very well.
Before we bid farewell, I have my roots in the north, born in Northern Ireland. You're very much an Irishman of the south. It's a part of Ireland I haven't seen as much of as I would have liked to, because normally I go over and I spend time with family in Belfast and Hollywood and surrounds the Ulster part of the world that he used to hammer on such a regular basis. For somebody like me who knows it reasonably, for people who maybe haven't been at all, if you are CJ Stander, representative of Tourism Ireland, convincing people to come and pay a visit, now that the greatest rugby icon is no longer and is working as a gardener in South Africa instead, what's selling your part of the world in Ireland to the world? Why should we be going over and spending time there, and where should we go?
I actually, at some stage, I was the ambassador for Limerick, you know, tourism. So I know quite a bit of Limerick. But if you have time, I would definitely go down to the south. If you look into Galway, between Limerick and Galway's Cliffs of Moher, it's a lovely, I reckon it should have been one of the seven wonders, would have been the eight wonders then, but it's quite nice. You can spend time in Galway, time down in Limerick, then you can go down to Cork, and you can go spend time in the Ring of Kerry. And it's all landscape. It's all rural areas where you can actually disappear for 3 or 4 days and actually get the real, for me anyway, south of Ireland. If you go down to TC's Bar in Dingle, no one's going to understand you when you speak English, because that's the different accent they have there. But those are the type of places I would recommend to go to. Local pubs in Dingle, Limerick. What do we have in Limerick? We've got Jerry Flannery's pub there. I reckon that's a spot where if you, Flaws is the place called, if you walk in there and ask for a pint and you might mention my name, you might get the first one for free.
I'm going to try exactly that. That's on my list. If I don't get it free, I shall be very disappointed. Message you instantly. But if I don't get a pint there on your name, then I'm looking forward to having one with you, because our last meal together was my house where you and Rake stayed over, and I had to make a leg of lamb for each of you, and you ate half of Rake's. And that was, we actually had nothing to eat. We just watched you demolish our dinner. So I think time for me to come around to the Stunders. Yep. I'll bring some Guinness with me. I'll bring some Chieftains. There you go. There's some good traditional Irish music. Yep. We'll line it up against Kurt and share some crack.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's been lovely getting to know you, obviously through Rake, and now yourself. I think you've got such a cool story to tell, and it's a wonderful story of somebody who had maybe hit the end of the road in terms of rugby, but found a new way to approach it and became all the more of a triumph for it. So thank you for that, and I know you need to go because Rake's lawn's looking a bit long.
Yeah, thanks, man. I actually just, it's raining, so we just cut it halfway. So I've still have to do another hour and then I'm allowed out of the box.
CJ Stander, thank you so much.
You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.